All right. I want to tell you here now about the only one. The whole concept of processing apparently revolves around this computation called the only one. So I'm talking to you now about all of processing in any step, and this doesn't particularly outdate, throw aside, upset what you already know about processing, you understand. But this and the other item which I have to talk to you about, both of them should, to some degree, clarify your idea of what you're doing and why the individual is having difficulties. All right. We discover in the PABs a long time ago all this about the only one. There was no great explanation as to all this because it had no real use in processing. It was merely understood that somebody, not as this is what happened to him, but as one of the manifestations of what happened to him, that he sort of got himself all grouped up, you know, and here he was, the only one. You got the idea? Now, the society at large will take some guy who's trying to do a job of one kind or another, and they will push him into this category whether he likes it or not. The society damn near insists on it. See? Well, are you the only one who fixes radiators in this town? Well, that's fine. That's all go to you. Get the idea. There is this big payoff for being the only one. It's a trap. Beautiful trap. It was just in accordance with this, it was practically over my dead body that in Elizabeth, I finally said, well, yes, I worked up Dianetics. Up to that time, I said it was a group of engineers that did this, and I haven't got nothing to do with this. But the only way that we could secure the science of Dianetics and keep it from running off at the edges and back into psychotherapy or become diluted with you only have Dianetics when you get your tibia repaired by the medical profession or something of this sort, was to put a brand name on it. Well, I did that. So this Hubbard is simply a safeguarding brand name up to the time when we could spread it out again. It was a horrible thing. Well, I know what I'm talking about when I talk to you about the only one. Society, just absolutely machine guns, first insists, you see, in order to have anything, that there be an only one computation mixed up with it, you see. And then having gotten you into that position, then they find a wall. And they go get one of the better and more modern varieties of machine guns and start firing. This is your aberrative line. A group starts up, you see. Then something happens to some portion or another of the group, leaving one person, let us say, safeguarding the mores or information of this group. You understand how this could be? Well, the society is at first attracted by this, and then they use it as the way to really get rid of this whole thing. Well, I knew something about this more or less instinctively, and so was perfectly prepared to take it on the chin. As a matter of fact, I'm on record on that effect at a board meeting in Elizabeth in no uncertain terms. All right. There is a payoff in the society, you understand. I use that word payoff in just the sense it's meant. The society awards or rewards to some degree anything that sets up as an only one. Got that? But that's part of the dwindling spiral, and just below that, they start mowing it down. Got the idea? It's desire and force inhibit. Now let's look at only one, desire. Oh, it's a great thing to be a movie star. That's the finest thing. That's the very thing you want to become, is a movie star. Now that's it. And to be the best comedian or the best singer in all of Hollywood. Now that's what you want to do. That's desire, see? All right, so this luckless girl goes over, you see, and see, me, and practices and develops her biceps or whatever singers do. And works And now she's got a lot of people around her. You know, they recognize she's good. They're going to move her up into lights and all that sort of thing. She is moving up into lights. They keep telling her, you've got to be the best. You've got to be the best. See, you've got to be the best singer there is anywhere around here. Now, we're working you up to the point where you are the star, the leading singer, you see, in Hollywood. Got it now? So she works and develops the biceps and all that and gets on up the line. And one day she has the enormous and fleeting satisfaction of being able to look down Broadway and see Mamie Glutz, the singing star of the 20th century. It's a fleeting glimpse because it took her so long to get dressed and get the makeup on. And there were so many autographs to sign that she barely made the performance, you see? Barely. And now, every single person who is on the road up and every person who has already secured a position as singer, they reach into their shoulder holster and throw a shell into the chamber. But there she is. See, she's got to be the best. She's got to stay on top. She's got to be there. She's got to stay on top. You get the idea. And boy, it is enough of a struggle that it wrecks them. I know, because I have these people every now and then as preclears. Got enough of them, so I turn them over to auditors more often than not. You said it. Staying up there being the only one. What's wrong with being the best? Well, there's no other best. There's one best, isn't there? Where the hell do you get a communication there? Guy talking to himself? What's he going to do now? Stand around and say, me, me, me? Me, me, me. Now, right? She's gone into a category where she has no comparable being. She has no datum of comparable magnitude. Let's say this girl really is good. Okay, sooner or later, she will say, if I were just back in the chorus, I was so happy back in the chorus. Yes, those were the good old days. But now here I live, this goldfish and a glass house. If I were to sneeze at my husband, it would get into whatever Luella Parsons is writing this afternoon. I've got to be a good girl. I've got to be what the public thinks. I'm on totally dependent on whether or not I eat devil's food or angel's food on the public opinion of what I should eat. The next thing you know, this person will start to fend off. They will begin to turn down appointments, you see, to sing, and begin to kind of move back. They will get a little bit bigger house, not bigger in rooms, but bigger in yard with more fence out there. The idea? They will start pulling back in further and further and further. Now we've hit inhibit. You see, desire and force inhibit. And all of a sudden they can't do it anymore. And boy, now do they want to. And we've got the next stage. See? Can't do it anymore. Gee, if I could only sing like I could sing when I was a kid. Oh, boy, wouldn't that be wonderful. But I've got to. And so they'll start to make some kind of a comeback all over again. And they will go through the same spiral again. And do you know what happens? Do you know that you probably could play the piano in 18-5? I could. 1835, I was a little bit better than 1805. 1805, I was studying law at Cambridge. Anyway, finally went completely downgrade and went to Johns Hopkins in 1886. But that's beside the point. Let's say that that's totally mythical past, by the way. Don't put it down in your notebook. Let's say that you, although I keep coming up and advising our attorneys on laws which have been out of existence since 1804 or 1805, I don't know quite how I do this. Pick it out of the air. All right. You get to a point of the only one, you see, desire and force inhibit. And the first thing you know, you're one body, a one body and a one-track mind, and you kick the bucket. Die is the polite word for it. And you have hit the DEI spiral before that death. All right, now let's take this poor joker named Liberace. Let's take this poor kid. He's a good kid, you understand? There's nothing wrong with this boy at all. They're making an ape out of him. When he finally gets through, just the thought of some old gal coming up to him and say, hee-hee-hee, we'll just make him go, mm-hmm. Now, the funny part of it is, all he'll have to do is look at a piano and feel sick of his stomach. You know that? All right, let's say Liberace lives through, kicks the bucket, gets born again, and this time, lucklessly enough, he has a mother and father who determine that they've got to have a piano player. This is just his bad luck, you know? You go through the between lives area and you takes your chance. So he didn't have them looked up in Dun and Bradstreet before he chose them as parents. He gets to be 7 years old without suspecting this horrible thought on his parents' part, you see. He doesn't suspect this thought. And all of a sudden, they come out with it. One day, the moving men come in with an old upright piano, see. And they put it in the living room. He says, who's that for? That's probably for Mama. It's nice. Gee, that's hard work those guys are doing. It doesn't re-stimulate him yet, you know. He's forgotten all this. He's forgotten all of this stuff and the TV and clever suits and curly hair and the candelabra on the piano. He's forgotten his whole works, you know. He's free now. All right. And then they say, well, Junior, this is your music teacher. He says, oh, it's all right. I probably won't be able to play as much. All right. Somebody sets him down at the piano and says, okay, this is C. Ping, 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 ping. Okay. He still thinks this is all right. But that night comes down with whooping cough. Mysterious thing. They plead with him. They don't let him play. They won't buy him a baseball mitt. They coax him. They bribe him. They get different teachers. And he goes on. He becomes a very sickly young man. Ping, 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 ping. He hasn't yet learned that that is C. You get the idea? Just the thought of studying that scale is just enough to drive him off of his base. He is completely below the level of being able to learn a piano. Now, how could we personalize this? Can you think of something that you just couldn't bear the thought of doing? Can you think of one profession or activity or art which you couldn't bear the thought of touching? What do you suppose you've done with it? Ping, ping. Teaching Liberace the scales would be almost impossible one life hence. You got the idea? It happens fairly fast. It happens fairly quickly. It isn't a long series of lives, degeneration, degeneration. You take a soldier out here, and maybe many lives have gone by. See, since he was in the American Revolution, he was a rifleman with the boys, and he used to up there and see those British cross belts, and pow, one dead Britisher, pow, one dead Britisher, pow, one dead Britisher. You know, he's all set. Of course, at the end of that life, the thought of killing a man is just more than he could bear. Being accurate with a rifle is something he must not do. Now, he didn't go to the 1815 war, and he didn't have very much to do with the Civil War. His pop bought him off. And he got through the Spanish-American War, and he joined up with a company, but they never got to Cuba. And he didn't get a chance on the range. And all of a sudden, along about World War II, some sergeant gets hold of him, see, and says, all right, son. Now, this is the muzzle, this is the trigger, this is the butt plate. Okay, now, you see, we're going to put up this little target here. Even at that length, he may go into complete re-stimulation. And what he regrets is accuracy. Now, get that. So he puts up this, you know, it's impossible for a human being to hold a rifle, male or female, to hold a rifle and put the sights on the target properly and squeeze the trigger without hitting the target, but they manage it. Got the idea? They manage it. and nobody can teach this boy how to shoot. The sergeant pleads with him. We could, if we were had him on an E-meter, we could take him on back down the line, and we'd find he didn't kill anybody in the 19th century. We haven't found the French Revolution or the American Revolution. Maybe he fought in both of them. Who knows? So, here we have somebody who cannot learn something. Why? He's hit the DEI scale as the only one. He was the best rifleman in Morgan's company in the American Revolution. The very best. Nobody could touch him. He could split a gourd at 200 paces. He could cut a string at 100 paces. And dead Britishers, they just all over the place. Overt act mechanism, another thing else. You can just lay that aside. Let's just take this guy as the best one. You can see his grandchildren before he died coming around saying, "Grandpop, Grandpop, I shoot some for us." And he'd say, "You kids run off and play." The life of Sergeant York is an interesting thing. This man has been a public figure ever since he was stupid enough to be a perfect marksman versus the German army. He was the best. The best. Now, they tried to make an only one of a fellow by the name of Ira Hayes right here in Arizona. They put him up in lights. They had him on a platform. They were patting him on the back. And unfortunately, he had too many times in too many lives, obviously, learned the lesson that you don't move into an only one category and take unto yourself exclusively the glory which more fittingly belongs to a number of other men, many of whom are no longer with us. So, they tried to push him in that direction. And he emptied a whiskey bottle out here someplace and went out and got himself beautifully cold and died of exposure here the other day, a few weeks ago. See? Just the thought of being put into this category was enough to make him bring about his own demise. You see that? So that you could become only one in enough categories. Now look at this. Only one in enough categories and go the DEI scale on enough things in enough categories to a point just where somebody was going to give you an award or give you a little glory or do something like that would cause you to blow your brains out. You just say, "No!" See? Why? What is all this about? Well, the rehabilitation of skill here is obvious. But it's much more important to understand the other mechanics behind this if it so intimately affects knowingness by learning. Any individual who is simply refusing to learn has sometime or another been the best philosopher in all of Spartica. See? Why did he become the best philosopher in all of Spartica? He was stupid enough to listen to his mother, probably. But anyhow, he did. And they came from far and wide to get philosophized at. And this was swell up to the time he was 45. But after that, he decided, you know, all these mobs of people pushing around here is pushing. When you get right down to it, they're pushing around here. So he hired a secretary and got a slave to keep some of them out. See what happened to him? Now you're trying to teach him literature in 1955 in the local public school. Literature. He probably got along fine. He was able to go along with the rest of the kids and be along fine, you know, and chew gum and go on out for recess and forget the whole thing and flop the examination. And, you know, he was just doing fine. Right up to the point of where they gave him something to read by a Greek playwright. And he felt kind of dazed, you know. He's supposed to have forgotten all that, you see. But it just didn't feel well. He went home and had the measles. And since that day, we can't get this boy to read anything. Now, this is true, then, of any disability that you will find anywhere in the human race. It's worth knowing, isn't it? It's worth knowing. The trouble is, you were too hot at it once. Hot enough so that you moved into a category of being the best. There was nothing wrong with being very hot at it. There was nothing wrong with being as good a marksman as any other marksman in Morgan's company. You see that? That was perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with that at all. But there was everything wrong with a company of riflemen, the like of which nobody had ever seen before, and being the best rifleman in that company. Suicide. Strictly. Murder. Why? You go out of communication, out of a two-way communication, and that's the answer to this. And that's the whole thing. Second, you move a guy into a category where he goes out of two-way communication with the rest of the human race, he's dead. You see that? Ira Hayes went out of communication with the men he really thought earned the plaudits which he was being given. See? He was out of communication with them. He was heroic. He was this and that. They tried to move him up into this category, and they just moved him up. And he says, where's that bottle in a nice cold place to lie down and kick off? So he did right away. All right. This is a horrible enough experience for people that when we take this boy, who was the best philosopher in Spartica, which had none, being a bunch of farmers, that really made him the only one, see? Farmers. Philosopher. Brrr. He learned a lesson. It mustn't happen again. He won't even read a seed catalog now. See this? See how this works? He'll overcompensate. He'll make sure. Because he knows it means going out of communication. When he learns that, when he learns that any subject will take him out of communication with his fellow man, he'll quit it. A Dianeticist, a Scientologist, must absolutely have in his vicinity other people who can do pretty well the same things he can do. You understand that? He has no business going off to Keokuk and sitting up in an office as the only one in Keokuk that can produce any results on human beings. Of course, he is somewhat the only one if he comes here to school and then goes back and trains a half a dozen auditors or group. He's still the only one. Well, get this desire in force inhibit. What's going to happen to this poor guy? He desires to be the best Scientologist because that seems to be the thing the society at large, believe me, is a fine thing, and there's nothing wrong with the society or anything else, but it'll cut your throat if it gets half a chance. This is obvious. Why? Because it has to keep people like you in line, that's why. What would happen to it if you were completely let run free? All right, so it's going to say that's the thing to do. Do you know that we really respect Dr. Jones over at the hospital because he is the best surgeon in the entire state. He listens to this. It sounds good. So he comes here to school. He becomes the best Scientologist in the entire state. You think he's going to know anything about the mind, next generation?
He's going to say, mind, do I have a mind?
Get the idea? What's the remedy for it? Being good or proficient or competent has very, very little to do with it. It doesn't matter how proficient or competent you get. That's not the point. Get as competent as you want to get. But for God's sakes, don't get that competent all by yourself. Got the idea? You make sure before you walk into this kind of a cul-de-sac that you get somebody else who will be just as good as you are, at least one, please, and then stays friend. So it's long about 2 o'clock in the morning, you've been auditing the mayor and so forth. Long about 2 o'clock in the morning, you can ring him up and you can say, you know, this son of a bitch, and damn, this friend, you know, every son you're alive. Sis, you have any idea what his wife does? You know, yak, 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 yak. Nothing wrong, you got communication going, haven't you? Well, whenever we, this is not the subject of this lecture, but it's just a specific application. Whenever we have failed to put two or three Scientologists into an area of somewhat equal magnitude. Why, they've drifted out of Scientology. And there's no sense in their drifting out of Scientology. That's the most stupid thing you could do. You got this information, now you have to be responsible for it. And if you were the very best in all of New York State, make sure somebody's the very best in New Jersey. Make sure of it. Got that? Much better is to have somebody else also be the very best in New York State. It's all right for us to be the very best in New York State. You got the idea? Now, nothing wrong with that at all. Now, why is this? Let me sum this up very rapidly. My attention was first called to this by little Bucky Fuller, Buckminster Fuller, a very, very fine little fellow. He invented just a tremendous quantity of stuff, the Dymaxion car and other things like this. He invented something called Dymaxion geometry. And I listened to a lecture by Bucky Fuller on this, and I really thanked him at the end of this line. That little guy can grind up the wheels in his head, and they really turn out the dope. He had actually proven that you cannot occupy space in any other way than by starting with two. You have to start with two in order to fill up space. To construct space, you have to have a minimum of two just to begin. And out of Bucky Fuller's material came that original, the original set of Dianetic axioms, the logics. A datum can be evaluated by data of comparable magnitude. You got the idea? So that you can understand a datum if you have another datum of comparable magnitude. Got the idea? All right. Two. I took his Dymaxion geometric principle, you see, and applied it to philosophy to see if it had worked, and it worked like a dream, and that was true. Then you had to have two. And now, this many years after, that was in 1950 in July, this many years after, I come up with this astonishing thing. That the violation of two-ness is aberration. And I have taken a vast battery of techniques now and run them on a bunch of volunteer pre-clears. Back of the bushes, sort of auditing. And have run each one of these processes to discover that when it finally resolved, it resolved on the consideration that there was only one something involved, and with no further solution on the part of the preclear. In other words, any process in the 75 processes, evidently, run long enough, will wind up with a consideration on the part of the preclear that there's a oneness. Get the idea? So what happens? We took each one of these chains of processes, you see, each one of these chains of logic, computations and so forth, and it finally ran what is evidently its dead end. And that at that dead end sat one. With any preclear processed on this line, came up with this consideration. And these are some of the hottest processes you ever heard of. And yet they will come up eventually and run head on into that until the case just stalls on the process until I give them a gear shift and throw them over into two. I'm the only one who could do that. See? That's the computation. That's his computation. He very often thinks I'm the only one who could process him up along this line. That's silly. You guys can. By the way, I've long since ceased to be the only one in this business. As a matter of fact, I dimly suspect that there's a little boy by the name of Baucom who is brighter than I am. I hope so. He hasn't showed up lately, so I'm going to write him a letter and bawl him out so he'll have to come over to defend himself. Geez, bright. He's a real bright boy. I think he's a lot brighter than I am. Good. a lot of you guys have got to be a better auditor than I am, too. You understand why? All right. All of these things come out here to the end of the line, and we find out that we had the Unit 1 staring us in the face. That was what was wrong. That was the basic aberration on this whole train of logic, or mislogic, in which this person was involved, which finally wound up with a crippled leg. One. Got the idea? The fellow finally tells you, well, at the age of 3, I sympathized with a little boy who had gotten polio and who thereafter walked with a cane. And you say, well, that's fine. That's fine. And if you weren't on the ball and you didn't know this computation, you wouldn't realize what's happened. This little kid of 3 has observed this horrible crime of one withered leg. And it said, hey, there's got to be 2. So he got one. You got it? That's all there is to it. There's got to be 2. Or more. 2 or more. When you start with 1, you're dead. Then what happens with a body? And why does a body deteriorate? Why does it age? Why does it die? In this universe, you have all of the vector lines, of course, pouring in upon a central point. Any central point, single point that you put up gets poured in upon. So a person finally winds up as a little black ball. If it's only one. Because the only thing that resolves it is communication. All right, now I'm going on to the second half of this without any pause whatsoever, because it is very definitely sequitur. You have followed me thus far. And the second one's real easy. We can demonstrate that any mass having to do with processes of thought, ridges, or anything of this character, will resolve in the presence of communication. You will agree with me on this, I am sure. Those of you who have audited in just mechanical two-way communication have seen masses sort of fall to pieces and depart while you were doing it. Those of you who cared to disperse a facsimile sitting in front of the preclear, all you had to do was to make the preclear say hello to it and have it say okay to the preclear, and back and forth and back and forth. And all of a sudden, the facsimile go, phew, even on a preclear who was in horrible condition. Now we take a preclear who's totally black, and we have him make the blackness say hello, and he says okay and back and forth. This is not an advised process, you understand? But nevertheless, that blackness will disintegrate. We don't care whether or not he gets some more blackness back. You have no idea what unlimited quantities of blackness. It's usually being put there by a machine that makes blackness. But you can continue throughout to disintegrate energy with communication. Watch that. Energy disintegrates with communication. And that gives us, and I want to tell you about this, Axiom 51. Well, it was necessary for me to talk to you folks. Now, I'm not going to give you a statement of Axiom 51 the way it is in the current edition of The Creation of Human Ability. I sneaked it in just before it went into the press. So it will be in the American edition. But it has to do with this. Just has to do with this. Communication disintegrates mass. So communication and postulates can affect change. Now, you understand there are earlier axioms that tell you that change is impossible. But remember, they merely mean this. Change is impossible by force acting against force, or space acting against space. When you have force acting against force, when you have space acting against force, or force acting against space, or space acting against force, you have not achieved a change. You might have gotten a change of form, but you affected a conservation of that energy. In other words, you made that energy persist. Persistence came about by an effort to change things by the use of force and space. You got that? Just add space in there. Mess, see? We're going to change that wall by throwing a battering ram at it. And boy, we might have changed the form of it. But all we did was make far more permanent the particles of energy in that wall. You got that? We pushed them out of location. So we made those particles of energy persist. They didn't disintegrate, did they? They didn't disintegrate. Every piece of energy there is in this universe, in every space that's here, is persisting because it's been changed in its original position. The perfect duplicate is making a copy of it with it in its original location, space, and time. All right, we got that now? That's a perfect duplicate, and things just go, including this stuff over here, the second you do that. If you change it at the original place, it would be by making a perfect duplicate. So you made a perfect duplicate of it in the original place. It would disappear. But if we come up here with a battering ram and we hit it, that just scatters it further from the original position. And so it becomes very permanent. Now, we could change the form of somebody's bank, but we would leave just as many energy particles in it in a far more permanent condition if we had changed it with force or energy. Therefore, the running of flows does not work. See what happens? You got it? To change mass, mist, matter, energy, space, or time, by the use of matter, energy, space, or time, only brings about a persistency. And this is Axiom 51. The effort to change matter, energy, space, or time, by the use of matter, energy, space, or time, brings about only a persistency of the matter, energy, space, and time. But postulates and communication can change matter, energy, space, and time, and thus auditing is possible. I got that clearly? You can use a postulate, or you can use communication, live communication I'm talking about now, and it says so in the axiom, a live communication and postulates, such as those of perfect duplication, and actually bring about a change of matter, energy, space, or time. You can actually change somebody's bank, and therefore auditing is possible, as long as you stick with postulates and communication. And that's Axiom 51, stated less accurately than it's in the book, but all the sense of it given to you there. In other words, aliveness and communication, alive communication rather, and postulates leveled against matter, energy, space, and time will change them. But matter, energy, space, and time leveled against matter, energy, space, and time only brings out about a persistence. But auditing is possible because postulates and communication can change things without making them persist. So we have a person with a withered leg. If we try to run flows on this leg, we're going to get a persistence at least of that energy. You got it? We're going to run flows. We're going to push it around. We're going to change the masses in it somehow or another, or the spaces connected with it. We're going to get a persistence of that withered condition. And that is why, formerly, we could not audit a chronic somatic. I'll get that real clearly. We couldn't audit a chronic somatic without confirming it. If we immediately and intimately addressed it with matter, energy, space, and time. We got that now? In other words, the best way we could guarantee an individual to have a persistently withered leg would be to do nothing but audit a withered leg with energies and masses. Understand that? Got that? But with postulates, changing of postulates, with communication. Communication is the junior thing to postulates. We could audit specifically that withered leg. We could make the leg say hello and he says okay to it. And the withered masses would disintegrate. Of course, we'd probably have to mock him up a new leg. You got the idea there. Axiom 51 tells us that auditing is possible because mist can be changed by postulates and communication. You can actually change form, you can change size, you can change shape, you can change the amount of energy present, you can change the persistence of the energy, the space in which it is, or the time which it is, by communication. And, of course, senior to that, by postulates. That's why you can audit. So don't drift off of this point, because that's why you can audit. If we didn't have that, actually, our auditing would not be successful. And where we have violated that in the past 5 years, our auditing has not been successful. And when our auditing was not successful in the past, we tried to change matter, energy, space, and time with matter, energy, space, and time. We thought a battering ram could change the quality of energy in the wall. Well, it certainly will change the form of the wall. But what are you going to do with the rubble? Did you ever try to sweep up any part of a downed building or a broken teacup? It's a lot more trouble lying in all those pieces than it is as a whole teacup or a whole town. If all the walls are in shape in a town and you wanted to take the town apart and move it away, you probably could do this. But if we started blowing it up in some fashion or other so as to remove it, this would be a very difficult thing to do. Now, an alive postulate, a person's postulates, or his communication, in other words, his ideas and communication at large, can change the force and phase of anything. This we can also demonstrate. But we had better take a good look at life and discover that life likes some masses. It likes some shapes. It doesn't mind forms. And so if we were doing this real well, we would make sure that in addition to auditing postulates and communications, we made it possible for the individual to bring back into existence those things which he destroyed. We simply wouldn't run communication at his engram bank to knock apart every pretty picture which he had accumulated in 76 trillion years. You got the idea? You have a very unhappy preclear. See? So you just show him that he can knock it apart with a postulate like a perfect duplication or hellos and okays to it very nicely. You know, hellos and okays. Oh, all of a sudden, the operation's gone. If you were doing a perfect job of auditing, you would say, all right, now reach out and put the operation picture back there. I don't want to do that. In other words, he's still unwilling to communicate with us. You get the idea? You keep persuading him and say, put it back there. So he does. So you say, all right, now hellos and okays. And it goes, boom. It's gone. You say, all right, get hold of it. What you're asking him to do? You're actually asking him to create the incident. Because the original facsimile is gone. Get it back. Now get that nice place there, that particular place you told me about, where the doctor started screaming at you just as he was snipping off your left eye. Now get that one. There, get that one. You got that real good? The fellow says, bleh. And you say, all right, give it some hellos, give it some okays, give you some hellos, and you give it some okays, and go, phooey again. The somatic goes out of the eye again. And you say, okay, now let's get that back again. The fellow says, oh, I've got it back again. He's real cheerful. You say, have you got it back again? And he said, why, certainly. You say, where's the somatic in your eye? You mean I got to put it in my eye, too? Yeah, we'll just get the idea that your eye hurts, too. All right, you got that now? You know what's the funniest thing? As a Thetan, he realizes that he can take anything. And that is the one thing which we very often omit from auditing. We are too engrossed in demonstrating to the individual that we are taking away all these evil things from his consciousness. You know, all these evil things we're taking away from him so that they won't bother him. Wrong pitch. Wrong deal. You know, I audit in the direction to show the individual how enjoyable it is to be able to create them far worse. And he, as a Thetan, gets up to the idea finally. He says, oh, well, you know, lead boots and burning towns and wars. Gee, you know, it certainly is a shocking thing to die. It certainly is. Have you had lunch? Look, if you're not going to get any sensation out of being operated on, why get operated on? I'll ask you that frankly. Waste of time, isn't it? If you can't get any feeling out of being run over by a caterpillar tractor or a tank, don't go to all that trouble. So, when you make something disappear with hellos and okays, you have your boy bring it back. Now, of course, you can't beef him up in the first 3 minutes of play into mocking up birth totally. You know, totally, and experiencing all the somatics much worse. But you could work at it. When you make him get rid of a facsimile with communication or a perfect duplication, you make darn sure that you have him get it back again at his option. So what's the trouble here? What's the trouble? What's the difficulty? Why should we have to do this? It's because this thing is automatic. And the only thing we're changing about the fellow is his willingness and option. You get the idea. That's all we're changing about him. Of course, we're changing his ideas too, but you can change all the ideas you want to change, and you won't change any mass. Or you can change ideas and change mass too. But ideas can be changed, and communications will change things. But there aren't any other changes possible to you or me or the rest of this whole universe. All right. So our idea of making the individual, this poor, helpless, weak, ill-fated, this poor old thing, making it possible so he won't have to get in contact with birth anymore. It's the wrong direction to go with auditing. You want to show this great big brute
of a very tough thing who is occupying this dear little girl's body that if he wants the sensations of birth, he can have them and handle them himself. You got the idea?
You start auditing great, big, tough thetans and stop auditing these poor, ill, thin, weak thetans. Got it?
Got it.
Now, what is life but being run over by tanks, boiled in oil, thrown in dungeons for 35 years, being estranged from a beloved one, you know, watching your best girl raped by the soldiers the night of the wedding. What is it? What's the matter? Don't you want any fun? ...99% of what's wrong with people is not enough excitement. And they get so inured to a dull place like this, they finally decide they don't want any. But the computation on which they run is this. What is the reward? And this is a very important part of Scientology. It's never been touched before. We go into another little point here, which is very definitely blood brother to what I've just been talking to you about. What is the reward of living? What is the reward of your surviving? What is the final pay that you get for having arrived? What's the payoff?
Okay. It's the living.
But there is a payoff. I've been over this ground very carefully. Trying to find out, I knew I didn't mind living. But I noticed there were a lot of people that didn't think they were being paid for it. Very funny thing has been happening lately. I've had a fellow working for me, of course. He's on a payroll. He's being paid in cash. But there's something very funny about it. He keeps going out and stealing trees off other people's property and planting them on mine. He keeps going out and getting discounts on pipe and motors and things like that, and then handing me the discount. Why? Because I'm a good fellow? Nope. He's getting better pay. Better pay involved in cash. Communication. What do you live for? What do you want all these wild experiences for? Run a series of experiments to find out, first, what body of techniques produced the most lasting result, and what of these techniques produced the best, fastest gain. And it all heads up under something you already know, C. We isolated out of the ARC triangle against everybody, over everybody's dead body. They all said it was R. R was what was important. It was how real everything was. And us psychiatrists are going to make sure that you're all got it real, real. In fact, we can make it a lot more real than you can stand. No, it wasn't R. It wasn't R. And some people over in the mosques were telling you, it's love. We live for love. And that's why we hate everybody, so, because we live for love. But the advanced clinical courses have processed down to its bare bone every part of the affinity scales without producing faster stable gains. Oh, we can change the living daylights out of somebody by processing affinity. Oh, we can change them all over the place. But not particularly for good and not particularly for keeps. They skid. They skid. They're like a rabbit on a track with grease shoes on. A was not the answer, nor was R, but C was. C was. And this little gain has just been made in this line, a summation of results. And that's why I just had these data I've given you here in this hour to tell you about, which are accumulated data over the last 2 weeks. You better know about them, because it'll help you out, I'm sure. People live for communication. And the pay is communication. And that's all the pay you will ever get for anything, is communication. And if you, for one moment, believe that communication is bad, then you've broken down through the crust. And there's no pay possible from there on out if you live to another 186 trillion years. Now, you know people that think money is bad. You know this. Most people will work for money and think they're doing something. But you know people that will get to a point on working for money that they say it's very bad, and they will give something away, or they will give their services away, but they can't accept money for it. Got the idea? Money's bad. Money is evil. They have broken down through and have become messed at that point. Where, not where money is, because money is just your example, where they believe communication is evil. When communication becomes evil, when there's many things you cannot communicate with, you have just lost your pay. You can't now be paid for anything. The lilies of the field broke down through that and started to grow lilies. Hope somebody would come by and look at least once in a while. Got the idea? Your body is solid because it hopes someday somebody will say something to it. You got that? People will come along and they will stand in front of you right up here, see? How are you, they will say. They hope you will say hello. And they actually would settle for get the hell out of my way. See, that's better than no communication. Any communication is better than no communication. Anything is better than nothing to a Thetan. We knew that for a long time. But any communication is better than no communication, and a person is unable to find life worth living to the degree that he has found certain kinds of communication bad. Got the idea. Now, we're talking now about a live communication. We are not talking about bullet communication. You understand this? We're talking about a live communication. Here is an individual to whom all apathetic, griefy, fearful, angry, antagonistic, bored, enthusiastic, and exhilarative communications are bad. He can only now talk on the serene band. And we wonder, what's wrong with this boy? Would you wonder what was wrong with somebody standing close to a pay window after a hard week's work, unable to bring himself to go up and get his pay envelope? You'd think that guy was crazy, wouldn't you? Here he is standing there, maybe the wife and kids home, they need chow and all this sort of thing, and he's standing there, and he just can't bring himself to go on up to the pay envelope and take the pay that's there with his name on it already. You'd say he was nuts. So you walk up the street to somebody who's standing there on the corner wearing a brilliant polka dot dress, and you say to this person, "My goodness, what a gaudy dress." And they look at you with surprise and hate in their eyes. Why the hell did they put on the dress in the first place if they didn't expect some pay for it? And they're in the same condition as the individual who would stand outside the pay window and refuse to take any pay. You understand that? You see that? Now, I don't ask you to accept this on its face value, because I've never shoved a datum down anybody's throat. That's a fact. I may sound awful forceful about it sometimes, but I've never shoved a datum down anybody's throat. Actually, an awful lot of people have been in very good, solid agreement on the data that you get before it becomes shovable. Then sooner or later, your instructor is going to start shoving it down your throat because he's trying to get you through and get you educated, get you squared around so you get good results. See? That's a different thing. You've been preceded by a lot of people when he does that. Right at the time when we've got something in the wind, in the air, being tested, such as this data which I have given you in this hour, nobody's going to shove it down your throat. You get the idea? It's something to be grasped, proven, disproven, understood, or misunderstood, being sorted out. All right, let's look this over then. And find out that a very challenging statement has been made, that communication is the only pay there is in the whole universe, and we know very well that a thetan cannot do else but survive. He cannot do anything else but survive. Impossible for him to do anything else but survive. So we have a higher level. Of course, the body and the race at large believes that its total goal in life is survival. It believes this. But we've walked upstairs and found out what the pay was. And it's up to you to look it over and digest it and find out if that's true. The pay is communication. The pay for action, the pay for possession, the pay for effort, for emotion, for work, is communication. The pay for a chronic somatic is communication. The test process that backs this up is an interesting process to run. Simply this. How many things have you got that you could talk about? What would you permit other people to talk about? Isn't that a fascinating process? How many things you've got that you could talk about? And let's pull right out of the echelon of problems and solutions and recognize that we're into the senior process to problems and solutions. People have problems, so they can talk about them. They have solutions, shut people up. That's why I solve everything comes my way, you see. That's a private game I play. Now, communication is the pay. And if you could see communication in a pay envelope as the only thing you're going to get out of this life, and if you would recognize at the same time that there are many communications which you do not want or desire and which you would not enjoy, you can recognize that you might possibly be bankrupt, and that nobody would be able to pay you for living. Now, what's this only one? How does that fit into it? Brother, you can be one unit if you want to, if you've got somebody else just as good. Can't you? Why? You can have communication, can't you? But if you put yourself into the only one class, you run out of communication, and you can't have communication anymore. There are many kinds of communication which you suddenly are denied. And then you build up more and more kinds of communication which you don't want. You'll finally run completely out of the idea that your activity will ever be paid for. And so Liberace in the next life will get sick at his stomach when he sees a piano. Unless one of you boys processes it. You got that? Because he's going to get out of the idea that he's going to be paid for it. He will finally, at the butt end of his career, realize that his piano playing does not give him communication. And that playing a piano is not communicating. There's nobody playing pianos at Liberace. Is there? Now, there is what happens. So he runs on down the line, and so he declares to himself, piano playing is not a communicating subject. So any subject which the individual, any subject with the individual will not learn, will not practice, or will not acquire competence in, including sanity, has simply hit this postulate. It is not a communicationable subject. You don't get paid for piano playing. You don't get paid for being sane. In other words, there's no communication. Because we play the piano, that's not communication. See? You got it? It's a subject where you would work for love alone and you'd never get paid with a bright hello. You get the idea? The only pay there is would be the hello, the okay, the communication, the yap-yap, the gab-gab, walla-walla. Gee, I had a swell concert tonight, except for those two old babes back in the rear there that kept on yap-yap-yap-yap-yap during the whole concert. Ah, but this guy's still talking to his friend about it. Later on, he merely sits there and glowers and goes plang, 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 and listens to those two old babes going yap-yap-yap-yap. He's beginning to resent their communication. One way. Guy in real good shape could take a piano up on the stage, see? Sit it down and go plang, plang, plang. And if somebody back in the hall all of a sudden pulled a piano into the aisle and went plang, 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 you understand this fellow on the stage is in real good shape. He's in real good shape. He would be utterly delighted. He would say, for God's sakes, look what happened. See, and he'd go plang, plang, and the other guy, if he isn't in good shape, go plang, plang, hell with the audience. Got the idea? There's his pay. Now, you see that clearly? All right, communication is the pay, and I don't want you to just believe it, see? I don't want you to just sit there and say, well, that's true, runs it, so you don't say that anyhow. But... You shouldn't sit there and say that. Just look around and find out if that isn't so. Now, there is a test process which goes along with this that you can test on somebody. Give me some things you can talk about. Do you have anything you can talk about? Do you do anything you can talk about? What can other people talk about? That's the exact auditing commands, by the way. You got them now? What do you got that you can talk about? What do you do that you can talk about? You understand? All of a sudden, you'll find a case just going like a scared rabbit right down the road because he all of a sudden says, well, gee whiz, I originally got the car so that people would say yap, 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 yap. But Lord knows, I've got a car now, but I just hope they won't mention it. I haven't got a car I could talk about. But let's see, I could do something. This guy could have a wreck. I'd at least be able to talk to the police about it. Well, now, you don't have to give the person you're testing it on the key or tip-off that communication is the pay. You just run the process straight. I'm sure that you'll come up with exactly the same conclusion which I've arrived at on auditing the series of test cases. When I got him into good shape, but obviously it's true, when I got him into good shape, they could be paid by life. They could be paid for living. And they were happy to live. But until I did that, they wanted to die. Why? They couldn't be paid. One, they didn't know what was going to pay them. Anyhow, they'd forgotten. And two, communication had become so abhorrent to them that they realized it couldn't possibly be communication that would ever pay them. And three, they had an awful lot of things to talk about, but nobody to talk with, and no energy left on the subject. You see that? Now, we take somebody... Let's just, as he goes over these things, he all of a sudden realizes that he has a lot of disabilities that he could talk about. You know, I am the worst cook. You know, I just can't cook at all, this fellow says. It's a disability. That's upscale from cooking. Before you got him up to that height, He wouldn't even talk about cooking. He just sat and snarled quietly into his plate, whatever was set in front of him, and he ate because he was supposed to. We got it now? Well, I've given you a lot of dope. I know you've assimilated all of it. I know you understand all of it. And I know you realize why I got you together and broke up your auditing period. Now I got to go audit to Preclear. So thank you very, very much.